Neil Petch is the chairman at Virtue Group, which has a history of business successes. Neil is well known in the UAE and beyond as a top media professional and a visionary entrepreneur with a passion for helping others establish and grow their own businesses and become superstars. Neil founded Virtue Zone in 2009 and quickly established it as the region's leading company formation experts. Then he launched Virtue Group, a holding company that has a wider mandate of supporting startups from establishment to successful market entry and all the way through to exit. Today we are with Neil at Virtue Zone talking about his stories of innovation, entrepreneurship and life. We are absolutely delighted and privileged to have Neil Petch, the chairman of Virtue Group and Virtue Zone, with us this afternoon to share his thought leadership, his insights and his ideas. He's been a veteran in Dubai and he's part of the fixtures and fittings a wee bit like me. So we'll talk about a lot of things and the changes that have taken place in this country over the last 25 years. Neil, real pleasure to see you.
Thank you for having me, Tarek.
Happy to be here, see your wonderful offices out there. Energetic team is just really special to be here talking to you in this sort of comfortable, wonderful environment. So thank you. Before we start, what's this? It's a beautiful painting. Do you have a story about this?
Yes, I do, actually. I think if ever you doubt karma, listen to this story. I have a dear friend from university. He had built up an incredibly successful business in London. He was a dentist with a partner. Unfortunately, things unraveled a little and his partner wasn't totally happy with how things were going. So things were needing to move in different directions. And he had a particular line, like you, Tarek, in Pata. He could relax people. And as you know, when you're a dentist, if you're trying to talk to the dentist with your mouth full, it's rather difficult to be amusing.
Yes, indeed.
So Ralph, my friend, was talking to this anonymous person who had entered under a pseudonym and was saying that the day before his soon-to-be ex-partner had come in and was saying, you know, we're going our separate ways. I'm going to take that painting, and that painting. And Ralph said, you know what? I wish you the best in the world. Have them all. Let's do this nicely. Shook his hand and moved on. And he was relaying this story to this anonymous person in the chair, leaning back. And then the next day, a brown paper package arrived at the door with some string on it, rather large. And it was a butterfly painting from Damien Hirst, the anonymous person was Damien Hirst, the artist. And on the back of the butterfly painting, it said, don't let the blank, blank, blank get you down.
Okay.
So my friend's house is now full of Damien Hirsts. He's introduced me to him, and Damien was kind enough to not give me the shark in the formaldehyde, but draw a picture of it.
Okay, perhaps that is symbolic. Are you a shark?
Well, it certainly reminds me that good things can come, and not a shark, but a falcon. I'd like to think, because we've done the version of Dragon's Den in Dubai a few years ago, Falcon's Lair, where we had a great competition to encourage young entrepreneurs, and I remember it was won by a young chap who happened to live in Emirates Hills, but his ideas were entirely his own for an internet radio station. And I think that's something which, you know, you mentioned the office being full of energy. You know, it's so motivational to come in the morning, and if you can pick up a vibe that people are happy and enjoy what they're doing. And we're blessed because our job is to help people set up companies and thus realize their dreams. So if we're doing our job correctly, we're making them happier. And so one of my common traits when I'm interviewing people is to say, look, you're going to work really hard at Virtue Zone. We're going to get our ounce of sweat from you, but we're going to give back. In return, we've got to make sure that you're enjoying it. We've got to make sure that when you wake up in the morning, you genuinely want to come in. And because otherwise, what's the point? I want motivated people that add that little bit of extra creativity. And if you're doing the mundane, then that doesn't happen so much. So we seem to have hit upon the magic dust there. And that's one of the things I'm most proud of.
One of the the examples in, when I'm interviewing people is that I like to hire people who are volunteers and have that refugee mentality, the immigrant mentality, that, you know, burn your bridges, go forward and enjoy and make stuff happen. And that energy, and then you get paid for it anyway, but that energy that you have when you come in is what really ignites the place. And when I enter your main reception area, actually we see that.
We had a feng shui lady come in and give us her comments, and I was I'm not sure if I was set up by my friends, but she essentially told us we had everything in the right place, and with the possible exception of my desk, which was way too busy. I really think she was just trying to make me feel powerful. But yes, she said that the reception is in the right area, I think we've got the best smiles in Dubai at our front desk.
There you go. Going back to your early days, Neil, are there any moments in your early life that you remember that helped to shape you to what you are today?
Well, there's the true moments, and then there's the moments that I've come to believe that I can remember. I'd like to think, lucky enough to be an expat child, so I've lived all over the world. I had, before I was a year old, I lived in the Bahamas, New York, and Kenya. And I travelled, giving my age away to your wonderful viewers, but we travelled from Manchester to Nairobi. It was on a Comet. We had to go via London, Rome, somewhere in Libya, Uganda, and then finally Nairobi. So it was quite a, you know, one had to work to get somewhere in those days. What was amazing for me, and what I've tried to transmit to both the people that I work with and certainly my family, is the ability to learn from wherever you are, not to go into your own community there, but to try and meet and learn from the locals. And we were doing a little ad for Virtue Zone recently, and I'd been given a script. I must confess, I don't make it all up myself. And it said that we had 19 different nationalities in Virtue Zone, 24 languages, and actually I felt like I was in an Emirates airline announcement. And it's just, you know, we are so representative of Dubai. We seem to have it right so that everyone interacts well with one another. And we've got it such that, because it's, I think, you know, to take risks and to try and develop yourself, you have to both trust and be confident in those around you. To achieve that, it's easy to say it. It's easy to give a lecture about you must do this, but actually to do it, and then to help those people that you work with do it, well, that's an awful lot more difficult. You were talking earlier about the difference between ideas and execution, and you know, I think it's a lot easier for us to enthuse and jump up and down about an idea, and perhaps even have one ourselves occasionally. But to get it done, that's a lot more difficult. And for me, we were just having a management lunch today, and we were talking, we were brainstorming, and I said to my team, you know, the key thing is we can nod our heads at one another and enthuse and be very positive in these meetings. But A, we can't do it ourselves. We depend upon those that we work with. And B, make sure that it is following through and it is happening. So some of the things that have really motivated me recently are when I hear a story about, if I give you an example, a wonderful gentleman that I brought in from Nepal, who originally would bring me a very lovely cup of ginger tea in the morning. He's now going on a course to learn about Salesforce to become our customer relationship manager assistant. And it's, you know, little successes like that where you see it in their eyes and you know that they're telling their family. And selfishly, as a business owner, it sends a message to the rest of my team that it's possible. So, you know, doing good does come back and benefit you enormously.
You speak very proudly about your team, and it's wonderful to see that energy. What drives you? What gets you up in the morning You know, what's your why?
Well, I think that I like complaining. So I like to say, oh, gosh, I'm too busy today. And then I sat back and analyzed it. And of course, it's not true at all. We like creating things. And I'm scared to say it, but it's genuinely true that when you see someone succeeding who you maybe have had a little bit of a hand in giving them a prod, and that means that you're succeeding through others, which I think is one of the definitions of management. It means that you're more able to enjoy your ginger tea and drive on your Harley Davidson, and it means that someone is expanding and evolving and perhaps replacing you in your job so that you can go on to do other things. So I happen to be in a company that has helped nearly 9,000 companies set up now. One of the dangers of that is it's such an entrepreneurial atmosphere where we're hearing great ideas, seeing passionate, super intelligent people every day. It means that quite often my most brilliant staff are wanting to do their own thing. They came in wanting to have that safe employee type position, and before you know it, are setting up on themselves. And I always try and remind myself, be happy.
Don't you enjoy that? Because that surely is one of the great achievements, that you are empowering people, enabling people, and they will come back and serve you in a different way.
Absolutely. And if I've done my job properly, they have learned so well that they don't need to set up a competitor to me.
Fair enough. When you've empowered, or when you've helped and enabled 9,000 companies, do you have two or three stories that come to your mind that you really feel that sense of achievement, that those nuggets, those diamonds that you found in this mine?
Yeah, I mean, I just got a call today from a guy who was renewing for the seventh year, and we launched VirtuZone in the teeth of the recession in July 2009, and we rapidly found that by great good fortune, we had come upon a product that people needed during the hard times. So, we were targeting an area of the market that you have to work just as hard for a small company as you do for a big company. The risks are much higher, but of course the reward is there as well, providing you can keep your costs down and be able to focus on your business. So we were all about trying to make that process smoother, trying to allow them to focus on their actual business. And then we rapidly realized that if we could provide them with a supportive environment, then we would not only be helping them, but because we depend upon them renewing the year after, we'd be helping ourselves as well. So again, emphasizing all your conversations about CSR, exactly the same thing for us. So for me, when I hear a story of where someone has come in, has set up on a shoestring, has advanced, that's the sort of thing I love. And if I were to pluck an example, I remember that a husband and wife came in. They had they used to run an outdoor company. Outdoor advertising was in the doldrums. They had an idea to set up a storage and removal business. They launched something called Easy Truck, after a period of time, two of their staff had left them and had set up an identical copy. We helped them. We have a partnership with a law firm that provides great advice. And so the law firm said to them, look, yes, you can follow this through the courts, but far better spend your money on building the business. So they said, right, we want to actually have a warehouse where not only are we moving things around, but we can store it, but we don't have the money. So we invested through VirtuVest, which is our angel investment division of Virtu Group. To be able to help them, they got the warehouse, filled the warehouse before you knew it. I think our money with them was probably doing rather better than it was with ourselves at that stage. And Further down the line, that we were able to sell our interest in the company, and they're now, I'm glad to say, doing extremely well. Perhaps I should have kept the shares, but it's a great story of how we have provided them a not just stamp the license and speak to you once a year, but invest, help provide services to that company. So that's a good example.
Absolutely. Can we take a step back and could you explain the business model of Virtu Group and Virtu Zone, which is one of your flagships?
Absolutely, yeah. In 2009, we set up Virtu Zone. We set it up essentially in joint venture with the government. So we were at that stage providing one specific free zone license, which was from Fujairah. It was a free zone that had been in existence for a couple of years, but in that 2.5 years, they'd set up 25 companies. Before we had got past the same period, we'd put 2,500 companies in. So it was a great example, I think, of how private companies can work with government entities. And as you know, Sheikh Mohammed has been driving the fact that a government department should operate with a private company mentality, where it needs to provide service, and so we were, I guess, the first people to do that. And as the market matured and became more competitive, whilst at the time you don't like that, of course it makes you raise your standards, it makes you look at diversifying. So now if you came in through our door and you wanted to set a restaurant up or operate a yacht charter business or run a management consultancy, the solution for that, of course, is very, very different, and we have that range of products that enables us to do that. So that's how we have morphed.
So one side is the product and shaping the product. The other side is the value chain, and I see that you're doing a lot of elements to enable to help companies succeed, in terms of legal structure and design and various other elements. So you're empowering companies in a slightly more imaginative manner. What inspired you to do that? Were they coming to you and did you see this need, or were you just being entrepreneurial?
I was a media guy. I came here 24 years ago and launched a publishing company. I knew very little 9 years ago about setting up companies. And I remember, we had very quick success. The product, which is a cost-efficient way to set up your company, was very well received. But we were not planning, we were not building foundations, we were simply dealing with the interest that was there. And then as we came to our first anniversary, I remember we were, at that stage, we renewed 62% of the companies that had set up with us. So 38%, if I'm doing my maths correctly, had gone somewhere else. I thought, where have they gone? What have we done wrong? What are we doing not as well as some of our competitors? And then I found out that of that 38%, 98% had simply ceased to exist. In a startup situation, your costs are high, your revenues are low. So it was, I'd love to say it was a stroke of genius. It was complete fortune and us being totally selfish, we thought, how can we raise 62%? Well, we can help provide them with that environment. And as you meant, to start with, that was we would organize events for our customers and get them to introduce them to one another and see mutual areas of business. But as we've matured, I guess it's putting processes in place and formalizing partnerships, and so it's actually in 2017 it's going to be the huge driver for us to I've got some announcements coming up that I'm looking forward to making. And you can tell a lot about a man by his friends. You can tell a lot about a company by its partners, and we're very honoured and proud to have some pretty good names working with us, and look forward to expanding that over the forthcoming months.
Let me take you back into your teens. Were you a naughty child?
one of my memories was my father was managing director for British Airways North America, and British Airways had its own terminal at JFK. And I walked in with my father one day, and of course I was very proud that it was my terminal, so I thought with my early Napoleonic behavior. And there was a chap cleaning the windows, and my father said, "Tom, how are you? How's Gerald?" And on the face of it, that doesn't mean anything, but it was interesting. Absolutely every single part of the company that he was running, and a personal interest and a genuine warmth coming out from him, and that has always inspired me to be as good a man as he was, which I'm still striving towards, and I'll try and get within touching distance.
You developed your career as in a sort of semi-corporate. I mean, even though you were building a media empire, or one of the biggest media companies here, it was more of a corporate structure, or do you think it was very entrepreneurial? Because I'm just wondering whether you've been an entrepreneur throughout your life, or you got used to corporate life, and then over the last 10 years.
No, I'm a Gemini, so I'm obliged to have two sides to me. So I understand from those that get these things, and so I have this very corporate safe side to me, or so I think. Yes. My business partner thinks I'm a huge risk taker. And so when we launched ITP back in 1993-94, it was just after the second Gulf War, times were very, very difficult. I'd come from a large publishing company in London. I was used to receiving my health benefits and all that sort of thing, and that's what one clings on to. But I would say that the managing director of ITP and the founder of ITP, his ability was to make people believe in themselves. He was a genius at giving people belief in themselves and turning their idea into reality. And it's there that I started to pick up on the entrepreneurial beliefs that I have now, and also I just think, something which I think is fabulous here is how families seek to advance their children and help their children, and that's something that I've really seen from my friends from various communities here, that we Brits, yes, we send our kids to a good school and think that our job is done and the nanny will do the rest of it. But, putting in your own personal involvement and networking as we do through these events, it's so valuable.
You have been a serial investor in entrepreneurial companies, certainly over the last 10 years or so. What are you looking for when you invest?
Very often I get inspired by an idea. It might be something that is close to my heart and gives me the opportunity, for example, to travel. So I have businesses in South Africa because my mother lives there and I love the country. Some situations it's a series of coincidences. One of my little bits of skill that is a weakness and a strength is I believe not to accept failure, not to give up. Some might call it complete stupidity to carry on hitting your head against a brick wall. I find that I have been in many cases extraordinarily lucky when perhaps it was actually time to turn back and look for a different route. But it was that last bit that pushed through. So, for example, when people say, "How long did it take you to set up Virtue Zone?" I say 24 years, because it's 24 years of getting to know, hopefully, the right people, letting them know about you, trust you, believe in you, see your success.
if I had an idea and I came to you, what would be your series of your questions that you would ask me to evaluate my project?
Well, I think that one of the first pieces of advice and that I guess I have learnt from myself is don't be afraid of failure. There's nothing wrong with failing, and this is not just about setting up a business. This is working for a corporate organization, being prepared to make mistakes, because of course if you are, it means you're trying that little bit harder, you're taking risks and you're pushing at the boundaries, and that's why it's so important to have a great team, because in situations where office politics exists, that's much harder for that to happen, because someone's worried, well, if I try this, it might give my colleague an edge over me. So as the owner of a company, when you have staff, it's how do you get them all to work with one another, trust one another, and be driving towards a common goal.
Do you have a low threshold of tolerance for failure?
As a man who has spectacularly failed and continues to fail, I'd have to say I have a very high threshold. I as you know, I had a celebrity magazine, a social magazine, and I also had a nightlife portal. So we'd take a picture of Mr. Tarek with Robert De Niro and ask your names and spell it correctly in the social magazine. The nightlife version, it was rather harder to get the correct spelling of your name. So many years ago, in fact before Facebook, I had a team of developers in India trying to work out, the word tag didn't exist, but we were working out how to get you to tag your name in a photo. And we were that close to it. Problem with being that close is you keep on spending money because you think you're going to do it. So we continued and we continued and we lost quite a lot of money and we nearly got there. And would I have managed it? Would I have been tagging before our good friend Mr. Zuckerberg? Well, of course it's my story, so I'm going to say yes. But I was doing too many other things. So I think that don't feel that you're playing safe by doing lots of things, because by doing lots of things, you're stopping yourself doing one thing incredibly, incredibly well. So have confidence in your idea, whether it be your idea or a friend's idea, and go out there and make it happen.
And that was your key learning from there?
Yeah.
When do you know that you've got to quit?
Mm.
Is there a moment you feel, I've got to stop, I've got to retreat? Is there a point for you?
I think that, as I mentioned to you, it's the great mountaineers, the great marathon runners, it's actually their ability to push through that wall that our mind has set up. So your question is a difficult one, because the textbook answer, of course, is that, you know, one should set timelines and goals, and if you don't hit them, you've disciplined yourself, just like buying shares in the stock market. Don't get greedy. So I certainly approve of don't get greedy. But it's that incredibly fine line between, you know, just pushing that little bit more. Daley Thompson used to train on Christmas Day because he knew that the people he was competing against in the decathlon weren't, gave him that mental edge. And I think that I would like to think I have acquired a reputation for pushing and for not giving up. Sometimes it's cost me. But, you know, I've learnt from those times, and hopefully I can tease myself about them, which in itself is a very useful skill.
Neil, it's a real pleasure. It genuinely is, and a real privilege to be here with you and just talk about wonderful things. So thank you very much.
You brought some wisdom into the office for us, Eric. Thank you.
Appreciate it.